now I'm trying to tell people, startups, business is based upon relationships. People don't buy product. They don't buy technology. They have to trust you. If they don't trust you, because you're a startup. So do I trust IBM? Yeah, I don't need to see IBM people. I just need to get a price from them. I don't need to see Cisco people. I know their product. But if you say, hi, I'm Bruce, and my new startup is called Zero Carbon. It's a software that's designed for monitoring and switching different sources of energy. So if you have some tie power, if you have a hydrogen, that's what we work on. If you want to do solar, if you want to do wind, if you have actual PPAs, which is a private place, that's what the solar is, wind is today. You're buying credits. You're not actually buying energy. So all of that we mix together. So that you can't sell on the phone. You can't sell on conferencing. You've got to go sit down with the customer.
This is Startup Island Taiwan, the channel all about cutting edge technology, influential global tech players, and Taiwan.
Welcome to Startup Island Taiwan podcast. I am the co-host Chico.
And I'm the co-host Wendy.
Today we are glad to invite Bruce to come to our show. Bruce has been in the Taiwan startup ecosystem for so many years, and he's been the mentor to several global accelerators and know very well about Taiwan's corporate scenes and also the startup scenes. Welcome, Bruce.
Thank you for having me. So I've been in the entrepreneurial business for about 40 plus years. So we're not going to go through the whole history because that'll take a whole day. So I've done, in my 40 years, I've done about 20 plus startups, sometimes two startups at a time. So I understand, you know, I'm not like successful. I have the money of Elon Musk. So he can hire good people. I had to do the work with good people. So I've been mostly in telecom and home automation. We've done a lot of work in AI. We've done a lot of startups in VR. So I've been in VR, AR for 15 plus years. And then I, of course, as you said, I mentor quite a few startups and I mentor quite a few accelerator also. And I'm also the chair for Women in AI. And Women in AI is an international organization that brings together women who want to learn about AI, women who are in the field, who want to mentor other women in this field. Why a man? Well, my job is to build the organization. And I'm hoping, this is my second year, hoping to get out soon when we find someone. Every year we host a awards ceremony and a conference. We've been holding them in Sydney for last year and for the last few years, and we'll see this year where we host it. It might be somewhere else, it might be Korea or somewhere. But it's really about, because AI is such a big field. And the question is, what do you want to do? Do you want to be a data scientist? You want to be a data analyzer? Do you want to be a developer? You want to be an algorithm person? You want to be a salesperson? You know, what do you want to be? So even if you want to be a salesperson, and I've been a technical salesperson for many of my career, you have to know the product. You have to know the technology. You can't just go, hi, I'm selling AI. You know, what does that mean? AI is equal to HTML. Everybody has it. And some people know how to use it. Some people don't. So I've been doing, you know, trying to bring that organization for Asia, trying to build much more. We've got work going on in Cambodia, Australia, Korea, Taiwan. We have a great ambassador here in Taiwan. Leanne has been building the organization. So that is one of my areas that I really believe. The reason why I'm actually involved is two things about AI that bother me. One is, of course, imbalance of people. When I was in Silicon Valley, so my background was 20 plus years Silicon Valley. I'm born here in Taiwan. Yeah, so I was born here, and then I went to American school, TAS. And then I went to uni in the U.S., and then came back here for a while. I worked for my uncle in the plastics business, and then got married and moved back to the U.S., ended up in Silicon Valley. And in Silicon Valley, you know, I did 8 startups there, 8 or 9. And those startups was always, you'd hear a lot of languages. You hear different dialects of Hindi and Chinese, Taiwanese, you know, different English people from, and then we had companies with Germans, Norwegians, and, but the male to female ratio was always off. And that was something that when it comes to AI, where we're trying to understand data more. Before, we were just creating stuff. I created a streaming media company in 1998, before the internet really was going. So I didn't create. It was actually created by a friend of mine, and we helped launch the company. And then I've been in streaming media before streaming media was popular. So about 10 years before Steve Chen got his big, you know, YouTube. Is that the name of the company? Before he got acquired. The person who acquired, by the way, was the person who invested in my company 10 years before. So Eric Schmidt, who was the chairman at the time, was also an investor in iCast and in the streaming media company we were doing. So, you know, those are wonderful. Eric Schmidt and Larry Ellison were both investors in a couple of the companies I was with. And so a lot of companies I didn't start. A few of them I did, but a lot of them I joined very, very early, first 10. The big companies that actually went IPO, a company called TrueWire. TrueWire didn't go IPO. TrueWire was a residential gateway company, the first successful one in the U.S. market, a large deployment with AT&T. Then I did a company called Ruckus Wireless. In between, I spent about 5 years with the U.S. government writing some code on facial recognition, working with the team on facial recognition and other biometrics. So I was been doing that kind of work most of my life. When I was with the U.S. Government as a contractor, I'm not a spy, I'm a software guy.
How about you back to Taiwan?
I wanted to come back to Asia. And at the time, I could go to Europe as part of my project. My project was working with Italians, with a lot of different countries, Brazil, but they wouldn't let me go to Asia. So I always wanted to come home. So finally, Ruckus CEO, Selena Low, she offered me a job. You get a chance, you can come back to Asia. And that was on a Wednesday. And Monday, I was in China. And so I got to come back and I was traveling there with them for 4 years, 4+ years, nonstop. I didn't rest a day, but we were building a startup, and it was the most successful startup I've ever been involved in. It's still around. And Ruckus went IPO, so I made some money on that. But that was a really good team. And the companies that I'll talk about, the difference between success and failure is actually team. It's actually the family. Does it feel like a family, or does it feel like you're going to work? You know, does your boss yell at you for bad reasons, or do they yell at you for good reasons? You know, Cindy Lowe, CEO of Ruckus at the time, was probably one of the best managers I ever had. She was very direct. She was very strong, and she was focused on business. She never yelled at me for being ugly and fat, you know. She always said, you know, it was all about this quarter, this month, you know. With them, I ended up living in India for a couple of years. So I lived in India, built a big Wi-Fi network in India called the Kona Networks. So that was another startup I was involved in from scratch. And then that kind of led to me moving to Malaysia for a couple of years, building infrastructure in Malaysia, fiber optics. If you ever get to go to Langkawi, yeah. The Wi-Fi, I put that up with the team. And whenever I say I mean team, because
it's not startups or corporates, because
it was a startup. So it was a startup from one of the fairly wealthy families in Malaysia decided to do a telco, MSO. So they hired a banker guy to do it. And I'm a technical guy. So he hired myself and a guy from the UK for marketing. And we built out this network using Ruckus technology and other technologies. And from there, I got a call from an old friend that was having some technology and operation issues in China. So I went to join a company called Force 10. And while I was there, immediately, within a matter of a few months, a company called Dell bought them. So Dell bought Force 10. And so as the senior director for Asia, I ended up being a good position at Dell. And so I helped Dell with the networking side of data centers for a couple of years. Then Dell went private. And when Dell went private, I decided it was time to retire. And for the first time.
At that time?
Yeah. So I went. Young. I was very young then. Yeah. I retired and went to Texas to see my mom. I got a really nice package from Dell. And so they gave me a couple of years salary on the exit. So I got to spend a year with my mother as she was sick. So being able to kind of get around, see the world. I've lived in many countries. I lived this time in Shanghai and time in Malaysia, and I've been quite a bit of time in Brazil.
But I'm curious, why do you want to travel around Asia?
Why? Yeah. Because you got to see it. So as a startup, one of the things that a lot of people miss is, and by the way, one of the startups I did very early was a company called PictureTel. And PictureTel was the original video conferencing company in late 90s to early 2000. So I've been doing video conferencing a long, long time and encouraging people not to travel, but to do remote meetings. And that was my job. I used to travel around the world teaching people how to do remote meetings. And this was 2002 time. And then now I'm trying to tell people, startups, business is based upon relationships. People don't buy product. They don't buy technology. They have to trust you. If they don't trust you, because you're a startup. So do I trust IBM? Yeah, I don't need to see IBM people. I just need to get a price from them. I don't need to see Cisco people. I know their product. But if you say, hi, I'm Bruce, and my new startup is called Zero Carbon. It's a software that's designed for monitoring and switching different sources of energy. So if you have some Thai power, if you have a hydrogen, that's what we work on. If you want to do solar, if you want to do wind, if you have actual PPAs, which is a private place, that's what the solar is, wind is today. You're buying credits. You're not actually buying energy. So all of that we mix together. So that you can't sell on the phone. You can't sell on conferencing. You've got to go sit down with the customer. You've got to sit down and explain, look at them in the eye. And one of the things about startups here in Taiwan is they don't travel. And we just, within the last 3 or 4 years, we started going to CES. The government now, ITRI and TTA, you know, they are sending big teams to CES. But CES is just very busy. They really need to go out on their own, visit the customer, knock on the door. And the customer, when you spend time with someone, they'll tell you the truth eventually. But on a phone call, on everybody's kind of in a hurry, get off, I want to go take a nap, you know. So, you know, you don't get that excitement. And that's why I believe to sell, you have to look people in the eye. Until you are a big company, Microsoft, I don't need Microsoft to come see me because you know what they do.
And with all the things you've been doing, how do you manage your time?
So as you, we'll get back to the later story of me returning to Taiwan. Prior to my last retirement, my third retirement, which won't be the final one.
Spoiler alert.
I've retired from 7 days of week, and I'm down to 5 days now. But yes, I'm a workaholic. It's not good for your marriage. It's not good for family. My regrets, I used to travel. So I have documented travel about 4.5 million miles on the airlines. And then I'm a lifetime platinum on Marriott, which means I had to do over 800 nights. I've done way more than 800. So I'm a technical salesperson and a technical inventor and hardware software guy. So you have to be able to sit down with the customer and help them. So you have to help them install. You have to help them do things. You don't want them to just install your software and then forget you. You want to be there and sort of like push them every day. Even if you're just doing an API, the first 5-10 customers of yours, you need to go see them. How are they using it? Even if you just sit in the back and look, how do they use your API? Did they use it the way you thought? Did they install it the way you thought? Is there things that they'll turn around and go, hey, how come you don't have? You want to be there. You don't want them to say, oh, you don't have, I'm stopping. All right. You don't have it, I'm going to go somebody else. Instead, you want to be there. And when they say, oh, we don't have, you got to step in and go, what do you want? Let me call my team. Let me see if we can do it. And I've done this before where overnight or over a weekend, software developers will step up and do it. And they'll get the software done. They'll change. They'll create a new product. Maybe not fully working, but they'll create what the customer wants. And you have to be there. That's why I travel. Let's talk about Taiwan. And so I came back to Taiwan after my second retirement. And I was hanging out here. And a friend of mine worked at a company called Lite-On, Guangbao. And so I met with this group CEO at the time. Now he's chairman, Mr. Song. And we talked about how everybody in the company was the same and he wanted someone different. And so I came in as the different guy. And it's very, very difficult to be different in a corporate life. So I enjoyed it. I learned a lot about manufacturing. I learned about the mindset of corporates.
But at that time, you already live in Taiwan or?
I came back to Taiwan because I didn't want to be in Shanghai anymore. And this is my home. I will be buried here. So I wanted to come back here to be buried.
How about Texas?
No, I'm not going back to Texas. Wonderful place, wonderful people, but I'm not going back. There's a lot of reasons. And one of the main reasons is why I think being in Taiwan, being in software development or hardware development in Taiwan is a great place to be. And that's why I came back. I came back here because I'm an inventor and entrepreneur. So I came back and was just making stuff, having fun and inventing because I had done a lot of work with an accelerator in the U.S. called Wearable World, which we were building wearables and helping wearable companies. And so I came back here, kind of want to be doing that again and stay in that field. And I'd worked with a lot of little startups in the U.S., mentoring them, helping them. Came back to say, hey, you know, help them with manufacturing. And then I got pulled into Lite-On and trying to help them with a longer-term plan. And when I got there, Mr. Song asked me to develop where things will be in 5 years. So I wrote down where things would be in 5 years and all but VR, which is today happening. But in all the approach things that I said AI would come, and this was 7 years ago. I had already began working in AI about 7, 8 years ago or more. And before that, I had worked in AI. We didn't call it that. It was more BI, but it was similar. So I kind of looked at where things were. We had about 11 companies under us. We a very large business unit at the time. And because business units at large companies in Taiwan, the P&L is their responsibility. Corporate only monitors and yells at them and scolds them and gives them higher goals and asks them to, you know, save more money. So being a technical guy saying, hey, you know, the world's going this way, they can't actually do anything until a customer says so. They can't just go, hey, great, the world's going this way. Why don't we hire 3 or 4 people to study what AI is for our field? So what is AI for networking, for keyboard and mice? What is it for cameras? What is it? You can't do that because those are L's. Those aren't P. So Taiwan companies have this where every person needs to generate revenue or be part of a revenue generation. Whereas in the U.S. and Silicon Valley, we don't have that. We have R people and then we have D people and we separate them. We allow people to do R. We don't really allow people to do R for products. Now, by the way, that said, you know, of course, Taiwan is the most innovative country in the world. Do you know that?
I don't know.
You didn't know that? We don't call it innovation. We call it cost down.
Then I know.
But we cost down is innovation. If you didn't have cost down, you can't make the iPhone for the price that it's made at. You can't make networking gear. You can't make consumer electronics at the price that it is. It takes someone who has to look at that. And you'll find out that Taiwan companies don't care what they make. You can say, hi, this device will solve world hunger. And they will say, which line should it go on? What is my margin? And how can I cost down?
Yeah.
And you say, but no, forget all that. This is going to save the world. And they're going to tell you, what line does it go on? What's my margin? And how do I cost down? That's what they do. They're really, really good at it. And this is why I say to a lot, so I do mentor corporate still. So I worked at Lite-On for about on and off for about 7 years. And I moved from the CTO office to innovation. And we built an innovation platform. Now someone else has taken over. I retired so that I could work on my new startup. But when I was at Lite-On, I learned a lot about, you know, how the companies work, how design is done, how things are cost down, and how there is innovation and the pressure. And from that, I learned something that I teach startups, which is especially international startups, and that is how to manage a local team. So Taiwanese young people are very smart. They're very good. They come to work on time. You know, they stay until they get it done. They're very good at that. They have good loyalty. You don't have that in other countries. You don't get, in some countries close by, you pay somebody another 100 RMB, they'll change companies. You know, now I think it's 1,000, but we have loyalty here and we have people who are dedicated. So those are all the good side. The problem is our education system. So I will ask you two, what high school did you go to?
Dongguan High School.
And what was your rank?
I think in the middle.
Middle. Do you know your number?
I was the bottom one.
That's why we're in media. Yeah. We have personality. Yeah. But yeah, in Taiwan, when you ask an engineer and you say to them, what school did you go to? What high school did you go to? And what was your rank? Are you the banzang? Or are you the, you know, are you the head of your class? They'll tell you because it's a very competitive. So we don't have teamwork here. We have, I'm number one, you're number two, haha. My mommy's happy, your mommy's not. But whereas in the US, we have much more team activities. In Europe, we have much more team activity. Sports is not so popular here. You're supposed to go to Bushiban, to cram school instead of sports. And this is an issue. And whereas in Europe and West, at 3 o'clock, you go and you go play sports. Even though you're terrible at it, or you're great at it. I happen to be very good at it. That was my original life was sports. And that's why I was a bad student. Yeah. and so we don't have those. You know, we have only study. Now, when you get to college, to get ready, if you want to go work for the big company, so let's say you want to work at UMC, TSMC, Taijidian, you're going to probably go to one of the three good schools, Taida, Yamin Jiaotong, right? You're going to go to one of those, Tsinghua. And to get those schools, you had to take the cram. So I'm going to give you this. Number one, when you went to school, it was true, false, and multiple choice. Did you write any essays? Did you have to write, like, here's my opinion on this book? You don't need that, right? So we don't want your opinion. We want to know true, false, multiple choice, number one. Number two, the teacher is always right. When you were young, you probably asked the teacher, wait, why is that? Why is this? And you got in trouble, right? You got in trouble, didn't you?
Yeah.
I can tell. So those were the kids who didn't get the good grades because they asked too many questions. But those were the innovative ones. And so what did we do is we yell at them. We tell them, get in line, don't ask questions, just do the test, prepare for the test. Mm-hmm. But when you come to work, especially at a startup, there is no test. It's a test every day, but it's an opinion. Mm-hmm. Should I choose Windows or Apple? Should I choose Java or C++? AWS or cloud? Those are all questions that you have to make a decision for. Instead, what do we ask? We ask a lot, boss, what do you want?
We need memo.
Yeah.
We need guideline.
Yeah.
So we can follow orders.
That's right. We follow orders. So if you true, false, multiple choice, no essay, and you prepared, and then you went to Bushiban, right? You went to cram school, right? So if you're going to go to Taida, NTU, you probably went to cram school from 3 o'clock till 10 p.m. your last year. You probably went to school at 8 and you got home at 10. And you went 6 days a week, especially your last year of school, maybe the last 2 years. Now, the teacher is always right. The principal is God, like a VP, right? Principal is like a CEO. Do not question the teacher. Do not question the book. Do not question the principal. Now, you come to my company, I love you because my SOP is always right. Do not question my SOP. Yeah. All right. Number two, your manager is always right. When the VP CEO walks in the room, you shut up and you listen, right? But not here at VNext, right? You guys don't have it. So that culture is why TSMC has trouble in Arizona. It's because the Americans have an opinion. They were taught to have an opinion. But a TSMC needs someone who will follow the SOP, the standard operating procedure, to the letter, in English or Chinese, follow it. Yeah. Don't say, an engineer could say, if I turn the temperature up 0.5 degrees, I can go home, 10 minutes early. At TSMC, you're dead. Right? The product fails. Yeah. So you can't. So you've got to have that mentality of follow. And that's why when you come to work for me, I'm an innovator. I'm an ideas guy. I'm going to say, hey, write a back-end e-commerce system. And you're going to go, okay. Now, if I ask the same thing of an American team, a Silicon Valley team, they'll ask me a few questions like, what do you want? How do you want to do it? And we'll sit down, we'll have a few meetings, and then they'll do it. In Taiwan, they'll just sit there because they don't know where to start. Instead of saying, hey, boss, can we have some meetings? Can we sit down? They're afraid to ask me because they think they're supposed to know. And I didn't expect them to know, but I expected them to ask. And we don't dare ask here. So many big companies are coming to Taiwan. You know, Google just hired a couple hundred people. Amazon has a bunch of people here. And the question I get most from these managers is, by the way, this is the same in Japan. I just came back from Japan, a very, very large company there, German company. The manager said to me, I have a great team, but I had to tell him everything.
But TSMC factory in Kumamoto is building smoothly.
Yeah, well, so will TSMC succeed in Japan? Yes, because they have the same mentality. Parts of China, yeah, they can succeed. Korea, yes. And that's why semiconductor is done in Asia. This is why very old semiconductor is done in the U.S. and in Europe and elsewhere. But the new stuff, by the way, you know that the laser, of course you have Ajam right here, the laser in his podcast, he said the laser now they get from Holland can cut your hair vertically 10 times. And so you think about, right, try it yourself. Try to get a knife and cut your own hair. Just, right? But that laser can do it. So that detail, you know, the energy of that, the how they do it, you've got to follow exactly what is said. You can't decide you're going to do something different. So we need that. Even in companies like Lite-On and Pegatron and Delta and all, they have the same thing. They want you to follow their SOP. And that's why we love these students. But now I have another hat. I do innovation. I do startups. How do I manage them? So I teach these Western companies and Western management, they come here, that they have to take the initiative and they have to break the ice. They have to start down this path. They have to say, okay, guys, let's have a meeting. Let's design this. And then you do this middleware. You do that back end. And then it's great. Once they understand what their goals are, then they can do it. But in the West, like when I did startups in the U.S., we were doing streaming media, and I would say to a guy, hey, just write me a directory of all streaming media that's going on the internet right now. And over in a couple of days, he wrote it. He's now head of Google in Germany. but, you know, he could just do it. Even though they were both PhDs, the local PhDs and local master students, they don't do that. And you know, I teach at university here in master's program and some PhDs students. And when they go to work, I ask them, okay, so you just graduated today. When you start work, it's like Monday, you know, Friday to Monday. You know, they get 2 days off and they got to go to work. I said, great. So you're going to work for this company. What tools do they use? I don't know. How do they process things? I don't know. And I got angry at them. And then I found out from that company, they don't want people to know. Yeah. They want them to come in blank. And so that they can teach them their way. So they can shape them.
Script.
Yeah. Yeah. And which is different. When I go to work in Silicon Valley, in my first day, the boss is going to say, write me a front end to an e-commerce system. And I got to sit down and work. I got to ask colleagues and, you know, people. I got to ask them questions and figure out what I've got to do. And I got to start working today. You can't go to Google and say, Google, what do you use? And Google don't want you. So that's what we got to really work on here is how do we take those kids who are innovative, who got in trouble, and make them the innovators and say to them, we want you to think.
Inside the corporate environment, how do you solve these problems? Because you already...
No.
Help. No?
No. And it's not their fault. It's corporate. And by the way, it's not Taiwan. I've done this. I've tried to build corporate innovation in... originally in the U.S., we failed. We tried it here in Taiwan. I've tried it in Thailand. We've tried it in France. I've tried it in Germany twice. And why corporate innovation fails? So there's two kinds of innovation. One is corporates trying to build a new product that they don't do today. So they do ABC. Now we want to do G, something new out of our area. Well, they don't know how to start. They don't do the market research. They don't know how a startup starts. So they'll only go back to ABCD that they're doing today and say, we want to do C+. All right. We want to do a little bit next to that. But again, they don't hire R&D people. They hire D. Develop something for me. They don't hire R. So that's corporates trying to innovate. The second one is, hey, let's buy a startup or let's work with a startup. And that fails internationally too. Number one reason, ego. Ego of the BU, of the business unit. Okay. So here's the ego problem. Number one, I've saw that already. Number two, especially in Taiwan, we have an accounting problem that if I buy or if I invest $1 million in a startup February 1, it goes into my February P&L. So it just means I've got to have an extra $1 million to keep my margin where it was. So I need to make an extra $1 million so I can spend $1 million. Well, if you don't have that, if the timing's not right. Number two, in the West, we amortize that investment over maybe months or years. Here, it's in your, and then next month, I have to report their revenue, but that's a startup. There is no revenue. So this is why we don't do startup. Don't come in. Now, there has been success cases. And if you study them, it's something that the company was already thinking about or needed. And they would bring a startup and go, oh, instead of hiring Microsoft, I could just hire you. I could buy you and we're done. And those have been successful. But what's very, very difficult is for corporates to look at an idea and say, okay, I'm going to buy this one. It's going to be over a few months. Number two, why don't Taiwanese companies buy international companies? Because they don't know how to manage them. So I know that there's been one great success in Israel. There's a Taiwanese company bought a company in Israel and they left them alone. And occasionally some accountant will go over. So what they send are accountants. If you go to the U.S., and you look at Taiwanese companies, they're Western or Westerner. And then it comes to accounting, all Taiwanese. We control the money.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is the problem is that we don't know how to manage international. We don't want to move people international. Few companies do and few people go. But this is a problem. Instead, you need to hire people locally, keep the company local, and then figure out how to work together. It's very, very difficult. So then there's a third thing. And this is the approach that I believe will work. And that is called venture building. And this is what we started to do and they're doing now at Lite-On and a couple of other companies, even in the U.S., some very large university programs now. I was just in the U.S., in California, talking to a couple of very large universities, and they are teaching this and building this, which is venture building. Venture building is I, as a corporate, have an idea. I want to do satellites, okay? Well, that's not something we do, but we have some technology that's good for satellites. So I'm going to take some of that technology, or I'm going to go to university, or I'm going to go to find a startup, and I'm going to acquire that, and then I'm going to, build a company from that. And it's separate. You cannot be in the corporate P&L. It's got to be 100% separate. So that works. But it's very difficult because that means the company has to invest, has to have a separate investment fund and be able to invest in that, their own company, their own subsidiary, and allow them to grow without the monthly P&L issue. So that will work. And this is something that's not new. I work for a company called Modus Ventures in the U.S., and they've been doing this for years, but they don't have a formal program. And now, working on what is a formal program for this. I've been mentoring a lot of startups in Taiwan, international startups. I've been mentoring local startups. And it all comes down to they all want to get into corporate and they all want to get a POC, proof of concept, in the corporate, right? That's just very different. You can do that. That's what the corporates offer you. But actually working with them, it's a little bit tougher.
Aside from the venture building, you also start your own startups. You just talk a little bit about that. Yeah. Maybe you can share more.
Yeah, so Zero Carbon Future is a very... The product and idea came from when the VC that I work with came to Taiwan, and we were talking to very large corporate bosses, and we were talking about hydrogen, and because we have a portfolio of hydrogen companies. And everybody here said, oh, great, we need hydrogen. We want to do hydrogen. We don't know how. Where does hydrogen come from? Who makes hydrogen? So we did a year-long study, and we found a lot of issues that we could solve. But it turns out that the market here is not ready. Now, let me explain. First of all, Taiwan, you only have one energy source. You only have Taidian. You only have Tai Power. You can get a little bit of solar. There's some solar farms out there. There's a wind farm for most of 1, 2, 3, costs $5 billion to make. And you can buy what is called a PPA from them. And so you can get the credits for what they do. So the reason we started this was almost everybody in Taiwan got a letter from Apple that said, by 2030, you will be green. So we got, oh, this is a great opportunity, right? Look at an opportunity. I always say to all startups, first of all, find something to solve, a real problem to solve. Number two, find a customer. So we had the people we had talked to. And we said, okay, great. We will then bring in the ammonia from Australia or somewhere, and we will store it, and we will convert ammonia into green ammonia into hydrogen, and then we can burn it here. Or we can burn it directly to Thai Power. Well, it turns out there's no green energy to convert ammonia into hydrogen in Taiwan. So right now what we're doing is we're creating a device with the university in the U.S., a device that will burn directly ammonia and skip the Haber-Bosch process of ammonia to hydrogen. So that's where we are. Because it turns out that Taiwanese corporates want to buy energy. They don't want to buy energy creation. Now, if you go to the U.S. and to Europe, energy is the responsibility of the factory manager, the reliable energy. His factory being reliable, it's his job. Energy in Taiwan is the responsibility of the government. And the factory managers I talked to here said, I buy energy from the government, and I buy it at a very good price. And the last problem we found was that the subsidy, that the price they pay is very good here. So it helps them keep their costs down. So why turn green? Let's just do an ESG report. Hey, let's just publish an ESG report, put it on our website. Everybody's happy. Ooh, our shareholders are happy. But the ESG report doesn't say how you're going to be green. The ESG doesn't report when. So what everybody looks at right now is the G part, the governance. Let's put in rules. Number two, let's look at the sustainability. Let's change it from full virgin plastics to recyclable plastics. All right. Let's change, by the way, one of the startups I work with does pineapple leather. So let's go from cow leather to pineapple leather. Hey, it's all great. But let's not look at the energy side, because the energy requires an investment. And this is where it all falls apart. And this is why we're focusing on creating our own device that will burn ammonia. And then we sell the energy from there. So that's one that I'm working on. I advise quite a few. One of the ones that's coming along very well is Motive, which is a treadmill. There are two treadmills. One is just a regular treadmill for your rehab or walking for your grandmother. So when it's hot outside or cold, you don't want your grandmother going outside. So it's a treadmill. Well, now it's boring. So we have put a big screen in front of it, or VR. So if it's VR, she can look all around. We have sensors there to make sure that she doesn't fall and her heart rate. So if she's not going, heart rate's too slow, we can raise it up or make it go up a hill, or we can – it's a dog walking app, by the way. So there's a dog. So she has the controller in her hand, so she can walk the dog. And so we can have the dog go a little faster. And if she's heart rate's too high, we can have the dog stop and poop and, you know, drink some water, you know. So that one, and then the second product, which is just now being patented, is a 360 treadmill, much more inexpensive than what's in the market today, allows you to walk in any direction. That's been in development for a couple of years. It's a New Zealand startup that came to Taiwan for design and manufacturing. They're here now. So, you know, there are different kinds of startups here. There are software-only startups. But I think, you know, what I always tell startups, two things. One, find a problem you're solving. To find a customer.
You are also working with several startups now?
Yes.
Even during your retired age?
Yeah. So my retirement is, like I said, I only work 5 days a week. So Mondays, normally I have all-day calls with startups. I have startups in Korea. So I was a global mentor for Canada up until recently. I'm helping projects in Queensland. I'm helping Austria. Those are my favorite countries. So Austria, and there's some Israeli startups that I work with. And then there's quite a few Taiwanese startups. You know, biomedical is good. Energy management monitoring is good. I don't do fintech.
Okay. We know that.
I'm curious, like, you're not doing one or two startups. You're doing like a dozen of it. And building startups is really hard. Why do you keep jumping into this loop?
Number one, let me explain a startup to you. startup people are the happiest depressed people in the world. So you're happy because you got an idea and you made a prototype and you're really, really happy. And then you realize you've got to actually find an investor. So now you're depressed. Then you found an angel investor. So you're happy. And then that angel investor says, okay, give me a customer. So now you're depressed because you don't have a customer. So this roller coaster ride, this is where energy and excitement comes from. So some people like to jump out of airplanes. Some people go to the gym and get endorphins by running on a treadmill. I do startups. Yeah. As you can tell, I don't exercise. You know, I build startups. And there are some great startups in Taiwan. There's a millimeter wave company here that's doing really well. There's a little microphone, a speaker company that's doing great. And TMY Tech is the millimeter wave company. And they're all doing great because the CEOs listen to advice and they know how to manage. So the problem with startups is this. You have some startup founders who are too close to the problem. So even my own startup, I need advisors. Even my own life. So I do a lot of personal coaching for careers, for mental health and all, because people who work in this field have that problem. But I have my own people I go to because I am the box. I can help you with your box, but I have my own problem. In my own startup, I need advice. I have a great board that has been doing this a long time. So that's kind of how, you know, working with startups, helping them with not just product direction and technology, but it's also mental health, showing them how to have a work-life balance. Even though I don't, I try to teach them how to have one. And it's just because I've gone through this problem, not sleeping for days. And I know what happens to your marriage. I know what happens to your kids.
Which project will you put most effort after you're retired?
So right now, the clean energy, zero carbon future, zerocf.ai. I'm putting most of my energy in right now, but I write a lot.
Like research reports.
I write a lot of research reports for mostly European companies because they like position papers. They like to know where things are going to be. I focus a lot of my speeches, my talks. So I do a lot of talks and a lot of that is about 2030. What jobs do you need? What skills do you need to be a manager in 2030? Because you guys are all young. And in 7 years, six years, you will all be vice president of somewhere. So hot, you hope? Maybe you don't want to be.
I want to be Bruce.
Bruce is a happy guy who's always depressed. And I'm happy because I get to see people and meet people and talk to people. But what skills, because don't forget we have AI coming, right? Everything's going to have AI. What do we need? What skills do you need? How are you going to manage those people?
So how can people reach out to you if they have questions or?
Very easy. Go to my brucebateman.com or email, which is my email at brucebateman.com.
Yeah, email. Yeah. Email at brucebateman.com.
Yeah, email at. Yeah. You can do anything. It'll still get to me. You can do happy dog and happy face at brucebateman.com. It'll get to me. So I think there's a great opportunity in Taiwan. I think the young people have a great opportunity. The question is, do you have the courage to do it or the stupidity to do it? Either one. Doesn't matter. I'm stupid half the time and I do things that I think will be successful. And then somebody will tell me no, or they'll tell me yes. And then I pivot. Let me explain this real quick. So my startup, ZeroCF, we've had to pivot a couple of times. So we thought we wanted to do A. Customer said, I like B. So we went to B. And then a bigger customer said, I like A. So we had to say, okay, do we do both or do we go back to A? And so there's a lot of discussion as to, you know, now we got to figure out which one's going to pay. Love what you do, but don't be in love. When you're in love, you're the problem. When you're in love, whatever your partner does, you're okay. Thank you, guys. Any more and last questions?
I think just all the young entrepreneurs, feel free to write email to
Bruce. I do calls with them or I can meet them for coffee. If you buy me coffee, I'll talk to you.
Okay.
Ideas are cheap. Execution. Doing it is very difficult. Yeah. Next time we can talk about how to raise money in Taiwan.
Yeah. Thank you for listening to Startup Island Taiwan podcast. We will see you next week.